Okay. All right, good morning. So we're picking up on page 552 or 553. And the Mishnah we're doing this morning is... Right, Ched. No, Perek Beis and Mishnah Ched. Ched, right. So we've seen over the past number of weeks different statements from Hillel. Again, the majority of the Mefarshim said that the Hillel we're speaking about is Hillel HaZaken, Hillel the Elder. So this is the last of the statements that are quoted here from Hillel HaZaken. Again, it's page 552 or 553, paragraph 8, Mishnah Ches. What's that?
599.
Okay. Oh, the old. Oh, the Sfar. That's Sfar. Sfar. Yeah. Well, Pirkei Avos, you know, from Ashkenaz to Sfar doesn't really change all that much. I guess when we say Kaddish at the end of this year, we'll say the Asmach Perkane. Okay. So we'll do it that way. Okay. So who are your Omer? So Hillel used to say as follows, and what follows is the number of statements that are structured in the same way, and we'll try to unpack all of them after we go through them. Mar bebasar, mar berima. The more flesh, and the Mefarshim say that flesh in this context can mean both, you know, basar in the sense of eating flesh, you know, the more flesh you eat, and also the more flesh that you gain as a result of eating all of that flesh. But the more basar either you consume or you put on yourself, mar berima, all it means is that there's going to be more worms when the time comes, and the body is decomposing, so there's going to be more for the worms to eat. Mar benechasim, the more possessions. Mar bedaiga, the more worry you're going to have. Mar benoshim, the more wives you have. Mar bekshafim, the more witchcraft you're going to have. Again, we'll try to explain how those two things go together. Mar b'shvachos, the more maidservants. Mar b'zima, the more immorality is going to come about. And mar b'avodim, the more slaves you have. Mar b'gezel, the more thievery is going to come about as a result. So in other words, the common denominator of all five of these statements is that if you increase X is going to lead to bad results, which are Y. And we'll elaborate on that in just a moment. Then Hillel changes tune, and he starts talking about positive results that come about from increasing certain things. Mar b'Torah, the more Torah that you increase. Mar b'Chayim, the more life you're going to have. Mar b'Yeshiva, the more yeshiva you engage in. So yeshiva literally, of course, means sitting, right? But that's not what it means over here. Marba yeshiva, marba chachma. The more sitting you do, the more wisdom you get. It doesn't work exactly like that. Right. 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 And probably even more important than having the sefer in front of the person is actually learning the sefer. The two don't always necessarily go hand in hand. But yeshiva over here, it can be translated in one of two ways. It definitely relates to Limud HaTorah. It can be a description of hasmada, of diligence in learning. In other words, the person we say even today, he's sitting and learning, right? He's glued to the seat. He's not going anywhere. So that's the yeshiva. But also the term yeshiva over here can be used in the sense in which we use it today as well, that yeshiva means that you're involved with other people who are also learning. In other words, you're not just sitting at a Beit Medrash by yourself, but marba yeshiva, you're in a group of people who are learning together. So if you do that, in other words, either you're assiduous, you're a masmid, or you're learning together with other people, marba chachma, that's going to increase the amount of wisdom that you get. Obviously, more time on task leads to greater wisdom, but also the dibuk chaverim, the being together with other colleagues and friends who are learning together, also increases the wisdom. Mar be'etza, one who increases asking for counsel, you know, he asks other people for their advice. Mar be'tvuna, the more understanding he's going to have. Mar be'tzaka, the more charity. Mar b'shalom, the more peace you're going to have. Kana shem tov, when you acquire a good name or a good reputation, kama la'atzmo, it's something which you acquire for yourself, which is a statement which on the surface seems difficult to understand. You acquire for your, when you acquire something, you acquire it for yourself as opposed to what? As opposed to acquiring it for somebody else. So we'll try to explain as we go through. Kana lo divrei Torah. If a person acquires words of Torah, kana lo chayei ha'olam haba, he's gained for himself the life of the world to come. So in very, very general terms, what Hillel is telling us in this statement is that there's certain things that if you increase and try to do a lot of, they have a negative effect. There are other things, again, mostly associated with the study of Torah, that if you increase and make more and more of, they will have a positive effect. In very, very general terms, that's what Hillel is describing over here. But there are a lot of ambiguities. There seems to be a lot of repetition. You know, in other words, there are a lot of different ways in which, you know, learning a lot of Torah is described as a good thing. So again, while we don't take issue with any of those statements, they're all correct, but they do seem to be a little bit redundant. You know, you have more Torah, you have more Chachma, you have more Yeshiva. Okay, we get it. You know, there's the more learning you do, the better it is. That's great. And the end of the Mishnah is also a little bit ambiguous. When you acquire a good name, you acquire it for yourself, as opposed to what? Acquiring Divrei Torah gives you the world of Olam Haba. Again, beautiful, wonderful, we all agree with it, but what's the thrust, what's the chiddush really, that the novel idea that Hillel is trying to put down over here. So there's an approach to this Mishnah which is first articulated by the Abarbanel in his Nachlas Avos, and later on in history, the Abarbanel, again, as we know, lived at the end of the 1400s, beginning of the 1500s. He did most of his writing at the beginning of the 1500s. Again, we've noted before, the Abarbanel, Don Yitzhak Abarbanel, was the finance minister of Spain when the Spanish expulsion took place in 1492. He was given the option. He was such a prominent member of the Spanish government that they actually gave him the option to remain in Spain, even though he was Jewish. And very heroically he refused. He said, you know, if my people are being thrown out of Spain, I'm going to go together with them. He ultimately made his way to Italy. And when he was in Italy, that's when he finally sat down and had the opportunity to write the many, many Sfarim which the Abarbanel produced. He wrote on Chumash, he wrote on Tanakh, he wrote on Pirkei Avos, on the Haggadah, he wrote the Sfarim of Hashkafa. You know, he produced a tremendous amount, and we understand that, you know, he was probably one of the few people who actually benefited from the Spanish expulsion, because as long as he was finance minister of Spain, you know, he was too busy to actually write. You know, they kicked him out of Spain, he lost his job, so he sat down and learned it all day, and you know, he churned out Sfarim left and right. So in a sense, in a kind of bizarre bittersweet sense, Klal Yisrael is all the richer for the fact that he lost his job as finance minister of Spain because of the expulsion, because we have all these Sfarim, and who knows, you know, these Sfarim might never have been written had he remained in that job as finance minister of Spain. So that was in the early 1500s, and about 300 some odd years later, the Tiferes Yisrael, Rabbi Yisrael Lifshitz, in his commentary to the Mishnayos, offers a very, very similar approach to this Mishnah. And that approach basically can be summarized as follows, and we'll try to plug it back in to the various statements over here. Both the Abarbanel and Tiferes Yisrael say the starting point of Hillel's discussion is to focus on the various different pleasures and desires that people typically have in this world. You know, most people yearn for one or more of the following things. And the first part of Hillel's statement is to show us that all of these things that people yearn for and wish they had are not as great as you think they are. And if anything, they will lead you to places which are not so good. They will have very, very negative results. One of the most basic taivos, one of the most basic earthly desires that people have is the desire for food and drink, you know, the most basic desire. We're not talking about, you know, people who eat and drink to live, you know, as we all have to do, but, you know, people who make food and drink into a thing. So, starting off with that, you know, Hillel says, Marbe Basar, the more meat, fancy meats you're going to consume, or again, as we said before, the more flesh you add to your body, you know, once upon a time, as hard as it is for us to understand this nowadays, overweight people were considered to be beautiful because it showed that maybe we could, those were the good old days, right? So overweight people were considered to be beautiful because you were wealthy enough to be able to eat all this stuff. If you were thin, so that was the sign that you were poor, and that was considered not to be so desirable. So here's a person who wants to be beautiful in the standards of what was considered to be beautiful for most of history. They want to eat much, you know, eat more and more and more until they get to be nice and marbe basar. They have a lot of flesh, and that's one of their motivating things in this world. They want to have that immediate pleasure of good food and good drink. So comes Hillel and says, you know, what's good in the short run is really not going to help you that much in the long run. You're not going to be able to take it with you. And if anything, Marberima, all that's going to happen is that when the worms ultimately, you know, consume your body after you're gone, they'll just have that much more to feast on, you know, at that point in time. So it's not really something to look forward to, says Hillel, to be consumed with a desire for food and drink. Translating this into modern times, again, we're putting words into Hillel's mouth a little bit, but I think he would definitely, definitely agree with this statement. You know, even not looking at it from a religious point of view, but just from a health point of view, people who are obsessed with food and drink, you know, end up very often creating for themselves health problems in the long run, you know, where, okay, in the short run, you got this kind of gratification, but in the long run, you know, it's not something which is ultimately going to be good for you. The same goes for, says Hillel, for the acquisition of money. You know, something else that people are very, very, this earthly desire that people have in this world is to amass money, to amass possessions. And says Hillel, leaving aside, you know, the religious implications of, you know, why you're wasting your life running after the acquisition of money, but even in a this-worldly sense, acquiring more and more money, more and more possessions isn't always the best thing. Marvin Achasim, Marvin Daiga. You know, the more possessions the person acquires, the more he has to worry about those possessions. You know, you're not necessarily making yourself a happier person by amassing more and more money. Again, just like food, obviously we need a certain amount of money to be able to live, you know, and again, most people don't want to live in such a way that they literally have exactly enough money that they need to live and not a penny more, you know. Again, that's not practical or helpful for most people. But if you're able to amass, you know, the money that you need to live plus a little bit of a cushion, okay, so that's fine. You know, the person who amasses a huge amount of property and money very often runs in to all kinds of worries and troubles that are associated with that money. So, you know, what you think is helpful in the short run is very oftentimes harmful in the long run. You know, the more possessions you have, the more worries you're going to have. Then another thing which is a motivating factor for people is seeking out sexual pleasures. So again, back in the day, a man was allowed to have more than one wife. What would motivate him to have more than one wife? Very often fulfilling that particular kind of desire. So a person says, you know, he wants to focus on fulfilling those desires that he has in life, and that's going to be something that's going to make him happy in life. Not necessarily, says Hillel, mar benashim, the more that you either have more wives, you know, so that you're obsessed with this, fulfilling this particular taiva, this particular need or want or desire, mar bikshafim, the more witchcraft you're going to have. Now, let's talk about that for a moment. The more wives, the more witchcraft. Yeah, really? That's how it works? You know, what's the connection? I mean, every... Right. Every woman is involved in witchcraft, you know. So, like, if you have five different wives, you've got to have that many more witchcrafty things, you know, happening in the house. I mean, what's going on? I'm not going to pretend I didn't hear anything. So there's an interesting comment. You know, both the Tiferes Yisrael and the Abarbanel try to understand this in different ways. The Tiferes Yisrael brings a very interesting interpretation. He says, you know, if a man is very obsessed with, you know, more wives and meaning more women and the like, he may get to the point where he desires a certain woman and he wants to do whatever he can in order to attract her. And if it means going to, you know, making use of magic or something of the like in order to somehow, I don't know, give her a love potion or something of that nature, he'll do whatever it takes, you know, in order to win the affections of this particular woman. And, you know, the person becomes obsessed with things that are just going to distract him and you know, not enable him to focus on other things in life. What's that? Right. In other words, Marbet Shafim, according to the Tiferes Yisrael, means that he's going to go out, you know, and he's going to try to do whatever he can, even in a magical sense, to try to find, you know, to try to attract this particular woman. The Abarbanel says something also very interesting, and I'll paraphrase it a little bit. The Abarbanel says that if the person, you know, the man in question is so, you know, so obsessed, you know, with women and more women, ultimately the women themselves are going to feel that, they're going to sense that, and he will find himself bewitched by the women in his life. Not necessarily in a literal witchcraft kind of sense, but he himself, I'll read you the language of the Abarbanel. It's an interesting way of putting it. He says, Hanoshim yivalbalu esmocho. The women are going to drive him crazy. The ahavaso osan. He's going to love them. He's going to lust after them so much. Ad shiyihye meshuga mimare enof. Until he goes crazy from what his eyes see. So I guess that's the idea. I think according to both the Abarbanel and to Tiferes Yisrael is that, you know, again, healthy relations between a husband and a wife, that's a wonderful thing. That's something that we all, you know, think is an important part of life. But in this case, you know, it's an obsession on the part of the man. It's something very unhealthy. And this obsession leads to him being bewitched in his own sense. You know, he loses his mind. And that's the kshafim, that's the witchcraft, you know, to which Pirkei Avos refers. Yeah?
So, you know, we talked about your husband. You were maybe talking about money, but I don't think we're talking about money here.
In what
money
sense?
Money is maybe for power. More money you have, more power.
Yeah.
Here, you have your things, you have to guard your things, you have to wash your things. Different. I don't think money is
okay. I hear that. I mean, that may relate to the
different level of time.
Right, right. No, I hear that. I mean, I think they're both true. In other words, the more money and power you have, you know, the more worries you have. Ultimately, power brings with it its own set of worries, and the more stuff you have, also the more worries you have. I mean, I think it's true. You know, either way you interpret the word nechasim. Lastly. And here the Abarbanel puts the next two phrases together. Marbe shvachos, marbe zima, marbe avodim, marbe gezel. Right? Shvachos and avodim, again, are really just two sides of the same coin. Shvachos means maidservants, avodim means slaves. Why would a person want many maidservants and slaves? So says the Abarbanel, it's not because you need someone to serve you necessarily. Again, very often, again, especially back in those days, it was not so unusual for a person to have a slave or a maidservant helping out around the house. You know, again, even through much of history, even through a few hundred years ago, having household help was not something that only the upper classes have. Even the middle classes, you know, very often had a servant at home. Right. In other words, yeah. Nowadays, a lot of that stuff is done, you know, by technology. A lot of the stuff that back in the day was done by slaves and the like. But why would you need a lot of slaves? Why would you need a lot of maidservants? So says the Abarbanel, what's motivating this individual who wants a lot of slaves and a lot of maidservants is a desire for kavod. It's a desire for honor and for glory. The person figures, you know, if I'm really an important person, the sign of importance is how many people jump when I snap my fingers. That's the sign of importance. So I need to have a lot of slaves around the house. and you'd still have a lot of maidservants around the house. Again, above and beyond what would be normal for somebody in that, in those social circumstances. You know, I just need to demonstrate how great a person I am, you know, and the measure of how great a person I am is how many slaves and how many maidservants I have at my disposal. That, says the Abarbanel, a big mistake. And says the Abarbanel, who's greater than Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu, the Pasuk says, Vahivi Shurin Melech, he was the king of the Jewish people. And how many servants did Moshe Rabbeinu have? Well, arguably Yoshua. And even Yoshua's relationship with Moshe Rabbeinu was not that of a slave, you know, running around getting coffee for Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a Rebbe Talmud relationship, you know. Okay, so he served Moshe Rabbeinu as well, but, you know, it's not, Moshe Rabbeinu certainly wasn't snapping his fingers and, you know, Yoshua was running around, you know, getting different things for Moshe Rabbeinu. So, you know, you don't need these trappings of kavod. And if anything, what's going to happen very often when you have these trappings of kavod? So, you know, it's hard to control all of these slaves and maidservants. The maidservants may be running around town engaging in all kinds of immoral activities. These slaves may be running around town stealing things, because this was something which was common in both cases. And at the end of the day, when your slave or your maidservant does something unethical or immoral, who does it come back to haunt? It comes back to haunt the master. And so what did you gain? You know, you were taking on all these servants, all these slaves and maidservants in order to bolster your own sense of importance. In the end of the day, all it's going to do is bring down your reputation. You know, just to translate this into the modern day idiom, again, you know, we don't have slaves and maidservants, you know, even children, there's a limit to what you can ask them to do. But, you know, to put it just in modern day terms, you know, things that you think are trappings of kavod very often come back to bite you, because they, you know, you become a very prominent individual, but then you're held to a higher standard and there's a greater degree of accountability, and you end up getting blamed for things that, you know, you couldn't necessarily have prevented. But that's because you're a chash of a person. If you're a chash of a person, you've got to be held accountable for this, that, and the other thing. So again, you know, we don't have the avodim and the shvachos, we don't have the slaves and the maidservants quite the way that that Pirkei Avos describes, but this basic idea is that, namely, that the more prominence and importance that you try to take on, you know, shelo l'shem shamayim, you're not trying to accomplish anything, you just want to be chashuv because you want to be chashuv, very often that very chashivus, that very sense of importance, is something which is going to come back to bite you on some level. So the bottom line is, say both the Abarbanel and Tiferes Yisrael, all of these things which people yearn for in life, whether it's, you know, food, whether it's property and money, whether it's sexual fulfillment, whether it's the sense of kavod and honor and glory and the like, they seem nice at the beginning, but in the end of the day, you know, when you play it out, there are more downsides than upsides that are associated with these various things. Okay, so what should you be running after in life? If all of these things that motivate people end up being more harm than good, what should I look for in life? So here, say both the Abarbanel and the Tiferes Yisrael, that's where Hillel comes with the second half of the Mishnah. And the theme of the second half of the Mishnah is an involvement in Torah and mitzvot, even though sometimes in the short term it seems like it's hurtful and harmful, and we'll elaborate on that. In the long term, you know, a commitment to Torah and mitzvot ultimately is the most beneficial thing that you can have, right? So it's sort of like the expression that Chazal have in a different place. Sometimes you have a road that seems shorter at the beginning but longer at the end, right? It seems like a shortcut, but then when you take it, you realize that it wasn't so helpful. And then sometimes you have a road that seems like it's longer in the beginning but turns out to be shorter in the end. You know, it seems like it's longer, but it's a better paved road and it gets you to where you want to go. Torah, sometimes in the beginning, does not seem as fun or fulfilling as a lot of these other things that were mentioned previously, but in the end of the day, you'll get far more out of it, not just in the world to come, not just, you know, schar in the next world, but you'll get olam hazeh. you'll get much more enjoyment in this world as well from your involvement in Torah. So marbe Torah, marbe chayim. Right? So we start off, the person who's involved more in Torah study, in a general sense, is going to increase his life. Now, that's not always literally true. In other words, you definitely have Talmidei Chachamim who passed away at younger ages, but as the Tiferes Yisrael points out, the quality of life that a person is going to have devoting himself to Torah is ultimately going to be much better than anything that he could have gotten out of these other pleasures. And that's even granted the fact that, as Chazal tell us in so many places, Torah study can be very tiring, and Torah study can take a lot out of the person. Right? Chazal explained that the Torah is referred to as Tushia. And Tushia means it's Mateshes Kolcho Shel Adam, that the person who's involved in Torah study very often is physically drained as a result of the study. It takes a lot out of the person, you know. But again, Lahavdil, the same way that a person, you know, might engage in exercise and feels, you know, somewhat tired and drained at the end of the exercise, but you know that the exercising is good for the person in the end of the day, so too, you know, the person, you know, it's not always fun to go to a shiur, you know, but I think we would say it's uplifting. It's, you know, it's something that's ultimately positive to go to the shiur, even if, you know, it's not quite the same kind of fun as going to an amusement park. So as mar b'Torah, mar b'chayim, you know, the real life, you know, is gained from Torah, even as Torah in a physical sense might, you know, be something difficult and even tiring. Mar b'yeshiva, mar b'chachma. Right? So again, as we said before, when a person is involved in yeshiva, which we said at least in part is about the idea of hasmada, of being involved in an assiduous study of Torah, giving up time, you know, the person might be inclined to say, look, a person has, you know, only X number of hours in the day. So, you know, you're telling me that you want me to be involved in Torah study, you know, try to take an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and, you know, devote them to Torah study. You know, I'm not going to become wise that way. I'm just going to be removed from, you know, all the rest of the affairs of the world in that way. And, you know, maybe I'll be, you know, I'll become more naive. I'll become less worldly. I won't, you know, I'll be, you know, caught up with my nose in the books. You know, it's not going to enable me to really relate to people in the fullest sense of the term. No. You know, the person will gain much chachma from his involvement in Torah study itself. And, you know, even if that means that, you know, to some extent he's not as fully involved in the world as he was previously, but in the end of the day, he'll come out well. Mar be'etza, mar be'tvuna. If he's engaged in etza, asking other people for their opinion. So this refers, says the Tiferes Yisrael, to the give and take that we know is part and parcel of Torah study. You know, I'm going through it with the Chavrusa says, you know, this is the way to understand it. I think this is the way to understand it. We ask a Rebbe, there's a lot of give and take. So a person might say, you know, you had this whole discussion for an hour about how to understand a particular piece in Torah, and, you know, sometimes you walk away and maybe you feel to yourself, okay, I kind of wasted that hour. You know, what was it? It was the Talmudic discussion, back and forth. What was the bottom line in the end of the day? But all of that discussion is mar b'tvuna. It gives you a certain depth of understanding. So even if you can't necessarily appreciate in the short term that you gained something from the discussion, you know, you said like this, I said like that, so how do we come up in the end, how do we come out in the end of the day? I don't really know, you know, but even that kind of discussion builds a person's depth and insight into understanding, and you should know that there's something permanent which is left there. I'll just mention as an aside, it's not relevant to the you know, to the approach of the Abarbanel to Pharisee stuff, but there's a very sharp and beautiful idea that's expressed over here by Reb Chaim Volozhin in his Ruach Chaim. He says as follows. He says there's a popular saying, I guess it was popular in Volozhin, I don't know, but there's a popular saying, says Reb Chaim Volozhin, that when you're not sure what to do, you should go ask for advice And then after you ask her advice, do whatever your seichel tells you is the right thing to do, irrespective of the advice. You know? Meaning what? Meaning very often you ask for advice, then you don't follow the advice. So you might say that that's a futile exercise. If you're not going to follow the advice, why did you ask for advice? So Reb Chaim Voloshin says, you know, the act of soliciting advice from someone else is very, very helpful, even if you don't follow the advice, because sometimes seeing how the other person looks at it helps you solidify the fact that you're convinced that that other person is wrong and that there's a better way of going about it. You know, asking for advice doesn't always mean that you find the right answer. Sometimes asking for advice can help you decide in your mind, yes, that is definitely the wrong answer, but the more people you talk to and the more different perspectives you get, sometimes it helps you realize that the way you were looking at it from, you know, to begin with, really is the best way of looking at it. It's a very interesting insight, you know, from Reb Chaim Voloshin. That's what he says, marbe eitza, marbe tvuna. The more people you ask for eitzas, the more depth of understanding you get, not necessarily because of the eitzas, not necessarily because of what people tell you, but just the very, you know, exercise of looking at it from multiple perspectives can sometimes help you understand, you know, get a deeper insight into the truth of something, even if that insight ends up leading you back to what you might have thought in the beginning before you asked anyone for their opinion. But at least now, I heard X, Y, Z, you know, 3, 4, 5 different opinions from people, and now I'm convinced that they're wrong. So now I can go with what I thought, you know, initially, and feel comfortable and confident in that particular perspective. A very, very interesting idea that he throws out over here. Finally, marbet tzedakah, marbet shalom. The more tzedakah you give, the more peace you have. And here too, explain the mefarshim we mentioned before, the Abarbanel and the Teferis Yisrael. In a sense, this is counterintuitive, right? Chazal tell us that if you want to gain money, you should give tzedakah. Right, you know, aser b'shvil shetis asher. You know, if you take off a tithe from your earnings and you give it to tzedakah, so that's going to lead to the person becoming wealthier. That's if you took an economics course. That's not what they would tell you, right? In other words, the best way to get money is to give money. Maybe okay if you're investing, maybe, you know. But so the answer is tzedakah is a form of investing. Right, it's a spiritual investing. So you know, this is stock is also one of those things that's counterintuitive. You know, offhand you would say that you're losing by giving away the tzedakah, but here comes Hillel and he says, no, the opposite is true. Marbet tzedakah, marbet shalom. The more tzedakah you give, ultimately, the more peace you're going to have, the more tranquility you're going to have in your life. You know, the more fulfillment you're going to have in your life. And again, as we said before, you know, ultimately giving tzedakah itself brings bracha into the person's household and, you know, is a net gain in terms of that. So here you have to counteract all of the things we spoke about before where, you know, investing in certain pleasures seems to be pleasurable in the short term but ends up being deleterious and negative in the long term. You know, there's the flip side of that is that a commitment to Torah and mitzvot, particularly the mitzvot of tzedakah, very often seems to be not helpful. It seems to be harmful even in the short term. But these are things that you invest in and they ultimately pay off for the long term. And that, says the Mishnah, is the summary. Kana shem tov. When you acquire a good name, and how do you acquire a good name? Well, ultimately, the person who has a good name is the person who invests his life in Torah and Maisim Tovim, right? It's not the person, you know, I don't think, I've never been to a Levaya where they get up and they're maspid the person who said, you know, he had such a great taste in foods. It was unbelievable. And Baruch Hashem, you know, after he had such a great taste in foods, he was mamish an adam gadol shein kamohu, the biggest guy you ever saw. You know, I haven't heard a hesped yet, you know, that focuses on that. This guy, Baruch Hashem, the list of women that he had what to do with, unbelievable. You know, I haven't been to that Levaya, you know. This guy, he was Rodev Kala. Yeah, I've been to the Levaya, but they're not mastered that way. you know, this guy, he ran after COVID like it was going out of style, right? These are things that, you know, at the end of the day, they, you know, that's not going to be the composition. Hopefully, that's not how the person is going to be remembered. Kana Shem Tov, if you acquire a good reputation, how do you do that? Through Torah and Mitzvahs and Maisim Tovim and Tzedakah and the like. Kana La'atzmo, you acquire it for yourself. So we asked the question before, what do you mean you acquired it for yourself as opposed to who? Who else got this Shem Tov? So says the Abarbanel, Kana La'atzmo means that that's something which is real. Now, etzem means the essence of something. So kana la'atzmo means that when you acquire a shem tov, a good name, through Torah and Ma'asim Tovim, you've added something onto your essence. That's something which is lasting. That's something which is meaningful. Right. Right. Those are all things that are external, right? And they're fleeting, and you're not going to take them with you. But here, kana la'atzmo, you acquired it for your essence. You made it part of who you really are, and that's something that can't be taken away from you. In other words, if your life is all about food, and then, you know, you find yourself all of a sudden, you know, right, you know, so what? So now who are you? You know, they took your personality away. My whole life was about eating, right? If my whole life was about money, Nebuch, you find this. People, their whole life is about COVID, and then the COVID gets taken away, and then they have this crisis. I don't know who I am anymore. You know, they took me away from me, right? But Torah and Mitzvahs and Ma'asim Tovim is something that once you acquire it, it's you. You know, it's not something that can ever be taken away from you. It's your essence. So that's even in Olam Hazeh, that's even in this world, where it's a meaningful acquisition, but you should know, concludes Hillel HaZaken, Kana lo divrei Torah, but there's something about the words of Torah which goes even beyond this world, Kana lo chayei ha'olam haba, you acquire the next world as well, meaning it's not just that you acquire things which are meaningful in this world, but the next world as well is something that you get as a result of your connection to Torah, and that's something which everyone would agree, all the money and the power and the fame, etc., 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 in the world is not going to get you Olam Haba. Nobody even pretends, you know, that making a lot of money is your ticket to Olam Haba, right? So this is something unique that Torah has that we should realize, and therefore we should adjust our priorities and our focus accordingly, you know, as we're going through this world. Again, this is the last of the statements of Hillel. Be'ez Hashem, we'll pick up next week. We'll start with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, one of the preeminent Talmidim of Hillel. And we will see everybody then.